Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Now, you're listening to the Red Seat Podcast.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux. Featuring Keaton DeRosier and Bob Osgood.
Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux. Today I'm joined by Keaton DeRosier and Bob Osgood of Over the Monster for episode 313 of the show. Gentlemen, you're both here, back in action. Bob, let's go to you first. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. Good to have everybody back here. It's been, about a month since we've all recorded together. And, you know, we knew the Red Sox would be 11-4 on the road at this point. We all said that for the first month of the season, I remember.
Yeah, we had that on lock. So, yeah, if you listened to us and you gambled appropriately, you're a much richer person today than you were back then.
Always drive to the casino.
That's right. Keaton, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Jake. And that was well played by you to go to Bob first to make up for leaving him off of the pre-pro entirely.
Yeah, well, you know, a guy leaves the pod for a month, you know, the pre-pro gets updated, so, you know.
You had one episode without me. What the hell are you talking about?
Well, welcome back anyway, Bob.
Thank you.
As always, you can send us emails at redseatpodcast@gmail.com. We didn't get any today, but we did get a couple questions from our lovely listeners on Twitter. So we will address those later in the show. This is the injury podcast, though. Unfortunately, I really want to talk about other stuff, but yeah, the injuries keep popping up. And today I was absolutely stunned by the one that popped up. Bob, you were nice enough to share the bad news as I was literally holding a giant stop sign at school because I was doing a parking lot
protest
duty at the end of the day.
There were three car accidents in the minute that followed.
Yeah, I looked down at my phone and I just audibly said some bad words and yeah, that was pretty shocking. The injury that we're talking about is Brian Baio to the IL, with a lat strain. You know, this puts the Red Sox in a terrible bind with Pivetta still on the IL, Whitlock still on the IL. The team is running out of arms. They're already stretched out to the point where they're, you know, putting Winkowski in the rotation. Criswell is now going to be a member of the rotation for the foreseeable future. He pitched really well today as we're talking about this. But really, I mean, this is stretching the Red Sox pitching depth to the absolute max. So I guess my first question is, and we'll start with you, Bob, since, you know, you've got a lot to say. Who comes up? Who's the guy? They brought up Zach Kelly. It feels like that was a move more for today. He pitched a couple of innings. I think Zach Kelly's probably deserving of a spot in the bullpen nevertheless, but they're going to need somebody else to give them length.
Yeah, I actually think the answer is nobody for now, because I think they can get through the next week or two and hopefully just not have another injury, which is not guaranteed with what we've seen so far this year. There was just a tweet a minute ago that says it's going to be Chase Anderson tomorrow, and I was going to say tomorrow's probably a bullpen game because they only used Joely Rodriguez and Zach Kelly out of the bullpen on Wednesday. So you got to think that Thursday is probably Chase Anderson for like three or four and then a bullpen game after that. And then they'll probably go Crawford, Winkowski, and Houck in the Cubs series this weekend, and then they have an off day on Monday, and that kind of resets things a little bit. So the next time that they would need a starter, assuming that they go with everybody on regular rest after that, is next Saturday, which is 9-10 days from now. And you got to hope that either Nick Pivetta or Garrett Whitlock is ready by that time. I guess there's no guarantee of that. So, you know, either way, maybe there's one start that they need to cover if there aren't any more injuries by next Saturday. They have a couple of off days coming up that I think are going to be opportune for them. You know, maybe Zach Kelly, who threw well today, maybe he stays up. Maybe they rotate that spot with to somebody else briefly, but I don't know. I mean, I think that there are other needs. I don't think that we're going to see a trade for a pitcher. I think that we'll talk about a couple other spots that they might be able to make a move, if anything. I just don't think it's going to happen in the rotation, short of seeing another injury. Hopefully all of these are 2 or 3 weeks between Pivetta and Whitlock and Bea that they need to cover. And somehow they're 14-11 with this team.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable that they've been able to, you know, keep their heads above water with this flurry of injuries. And it seems like since the worst of it has happened, they swept the Pirates, and now they've taken one of the two first games with Cleveland. So yeah, they're holding serve right now. You know, Keaton, the other name that's out there who could potentially come up for the Red Sox is a Tampa Bay arm, Naoyuki Uesawa, who the Red Sox acquired from them for cash, a 30-year-old right-hander. He's thrown 15 innings at AAA. Do you have any confidence in him as an option? And the reason why I mention him is just because he's really, him and Vladimir Gutierrez, who was also just recently acquired from Milwaukee, are really the only two options on the 40-man of guys who could potentially come up and give some length.
Yeah. I don't really think so over the options that they currently have. I suppose if they're looking for someone to get through more innings versus, as Bob pointed out, bullpen day here or there. Basically, if they just wanted to save the bullpen, they could go with that. But I don't feel real swayed either way. And I think Bob really did a great job of laying that out over the next kind of couple weeks. It's really one, maybe two slots that you need to fill. And I think they can probably get away with that with the roster that they have, barring any other injuries. So I don't feel like they need to kind of create space for that. I think they can get through it.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Bob did a nice job of outlining that. So I'm in agreement there. I think that the more pressing thing is certainly the other piece of bad news. And sort of the longer term piece of bad news is Tristan Casas. Being out with a broken rib. There's no real timetable for when he's going to be back. It wouldn't shock me if he ends up going on the 60-day IL, if they do decide to add someone else to this 40-man roster, because that would make a little bit of room. But he's going to be out for a while. It's kind of crazy that he cracked a rib while making a swing, but, you know, did happen, and it's kind of one of the few guys in this lineup that you really couldn't afford to lose. So I'm going to go back to you with this one, Keaton. How on earth do they go about replacing Tristan Casas in this lineup?
Yeah, that's not easy. I would actually be interested in seeing Nico Cavadas get a chance. I think he's off to a really hot start. In Worcester, hitter-friendly park that it is. And, I mean, they don't really have a whole lot of other options besides just a whole bunch of Bobby Dalbec, who is really bad. And I've seen enough. any other option, please. I don't need to see any more of him. So seeing Cavadas get a chance, I think, would be something that's really interesting. I don't know if I necessarily have a ton of hope that it would turn out like he'd continue to be on this heater, because it's a pretty big step up. And just the natural swing and miss he has in his game is probably going to lead to something similar to what we're getting from Bobby Dalbec. But hey, it's something new. And so there's always a chance it could go right.
Yeah, I really like that idea. And I wanted to ask you, Bob, what you would think of the idea of sending down David Hamilton and bringing up Cavadas in his spot, and then going with a platoon of Nico Cavadas and Bobby Dalbec at first base going forward, because Dalbec has been known to crush lefties. Nico Cavadas crushes righties. Seems like a natural platoon partner there.
I get what you're saying. I just really would like to see them go outside of the organization, because I agree. I think this is going to be a 60-day IL, and there are available bats who have proven themselves in the major leagues in recent years to be close to league average. I mean, Garrett Cooper just got released by Chicago. He was a 96 WRC plus guy a year ago. He hit 250. He had 17 homers. He's 33 years old. There's Brandon Belt, who I believe is still out there, and he was a 2-WAR player a year ago, and he had a 138 WRC plus. He's still a free agent, right? I haven't seen him sign anywhere.
He is still a free agent. He is still sitting at home.
He is 36. Retirement. He's a left-handed hitter. Seems like he would be a good fill-in. There's CJ Cron, who, for whatever reason, they released and felt that Bobby Dalbec was the better option for the opening day roster. I would like to see Cooper or Belt with Cron kind of as a backup. And I mean, this is a situation where you don't have to spend more than $1 million to bring a player like that. And it's not, right, they have to go make a key move at the deadline. It's $1 million probably to salvage first base in a key part of the lineup for the next 2 months on a team that is, as you said, treading water. So, sure, if they don't do anything in the same way that they didn't do anything in the Franchi Cordero fiasco 2 years ago and they didn't do anything at shortstop a year ago, that sucks. And if they don't, then yeah, I would say Cavadas would be a fine option to take a look at, but I just don't think it's the answer for 2 months.
Yeah, I really love the idea of Brandon Belt. I'm not as excited about Cooper. I think the one downside with Brandon Belt is, like, you have no idea what kind of baseball shape he's in, or, you know, how long it's going to take him to get his swing right and his timing right. So I think regardless, it would behoove the club to put Casas on the 60-day, add Cavadas to the 40-man, and bring him up, you know, immediately, instead of David Hamilton, who really has no role on this roster, in my opinion. And then also go out and sign Brandon Belt, you know, also get him in the pipeline because, you know, at the end of the day, if, what this ultimately results in is you having a healthy Tristan Casas and you have to have Casas and Brandon Belt on the roster at some point this year, that's a much better situation than having to, you know, have Bobby Dalbec up here.
Yeah. I mean, he's probably the worst hitter in baseball. I don't think that is a hot take. He did have a hit at the end of the game today, and before that, he was down at 0.29 with a slugging of 0.60, which I've just never seen before, 16 games into a season. He's just overmatched, and the incredible second half that he had in 2021 is just so far in the rear view at this point. I've never seen anybody get chances like this. It's a small sample, but he's got over a 50% K rate. It's just, enough's enough.
He's just a really nice guy.
I'm not going to argue that.
All right. Well, any last closing thoughts on the Casas situation, Keaton?
Yeah, just kind of one more for Nico here. He's really good at getting on base. Really good at drawing walks. And so I think that's, I mean, along with just the power that he has, his ability to get on base makes him more interesting than all of those guys, all the other options and outside the organization options as well. So I think that's kind of what's making me lean towards give him a chance, see what he's can do at the major league level versus one of those other options that Bob listed there.
I think the only leftover thing that I would say is this is now 3 years in a row that Casas has had an injury. These are all different injuries, and this one feels flukier. This one feels more in the Chris Sale type of injury compared to some of the, you know, shoulder and lower body injuries that he had previously, but it's just one more to add to the list here, and it's something to take into consideration. As much as we want to see Tristan Casas potentially get extended, that he has had an injury 3 years in a row, and none of them have really been minor. So, you know, it's just another season to weigh that along with everything else.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I wonder if that will affect his negotiations with the team as they're trying to get a long-term extension done with him. Before we move on to the next topic, a little trivia for you guys. Do either of you remember, without looking it up, what Brandon Belt's nickname was with the Giants?
I don't.
Old Leather.
Nope. Wasn't Old Leather. It was Baby Giraffe.
Nope, I didn't know that.
I didn't. That's great.
Yep.
You can bring that back if they bring him in.
Yeah, do you know what Christian Arroyo's nickname with the Giants was?
What?
Boss Baby.
Oh, that's a good one, too.
Yeah, because
the Giants seem to be good at...
He just looked like a child.
Good at these nicknames, that's for sure. Yeah. I think the Brandon Belt one originated, because he was actually like, he has a little bit of a long neck, and also he did like a thing where he was at a zoo with a baby giraffe and he was in the enclosure, and you know, they just started calling him Baby Giraffe after that. So yeah, that one goes back a long time. All right, our next situation. Tyler O'Neill and Rafael Devers are back, and in fact, both guys played pretty well today. Looking at the box score right now, Devers went 3 for 4, had a home run, looked really good at the plate, which he hasn't in a really long time. Tyler O'Neill's had hits in both of his games since he's been back, coming off the concussion. But Devers, you know, still not playing third base right now. And what this has created is a situation where Masataka Yoshida has found himself on the bench very frequently. Reason why, you know, Devers being at DH obviously takes up his spot. Willie Abreu is playing right field for this team. Duran's the center fielder. And then the left fielder is Tyler O'Neill. So it has been difficult to get him in there. Bob, we have a little bit of a disagreement here about the playing time for Masataka Yoshida. So why don't you start off here a little bit by laying out what you think should happen with this situation.
Yeah, I just am so confused by the way that Yoshida is handled with kid gloves to this excessive of an extent. Like, last year he broke down, I get it, late in the season. His strikeout rate, you know, increased significantly. Well, month and a half, they didn't play very well. And he had played 140 games and he had 580 plate appearances. So I was fine with that. Like, rein that in, give him 10 fewer starts, maybe plays 130 games. Don't play him as much in the field as last year. He had 84 starts in the outfield. So I think playing him less, playing him in the field less, all makes sense to keep him fresh. But it's like, this has been so excessive for somebody who has 4 years and $72 million remaining on his contract. And my understanding is that this is an everyday player that is the DH of this team. And he has a career 774 OPS. Like, I'm not going to debate that this probably isn't going to be worth every dollar of the contract and whether they should have done that or not, but he's here. And if he can't be on the field in all of these situations from the last 8 days, then we've got a Rusny Castillo situation all over again, where they should just demote him and use this spot where a DH who they cannot for some reason put into the field and have to give 2 days off when he is struggling. I mean, that's just a horrible use of a roster spot. So, you know, when he had a day off last Wednesday, which I think made sense, he'd gone 0 for 10 the previous 2 days, they sent out a lineup on last Thursday, and everyone was asking if it was a split squad game. But they're giving him a second day off, and they're using a catcher as a DH that day. And he comes back the next 2 games, seems to be fresh, goes 4 for 9, hits a home run in those 2 games, and now he has sat 3 games. He sat 4 days in a row with the off day, including Sunday, which, without hyperbole, is the worst lineup we've ever seen in our lifetimes. This is the lineup that they ran out there on Sunday: Rafaela, Duran, Ref Snyder, Abreu, Wong, Dahlbeck, Reyes, Heineman, another catcher at DH, this is his first game of the season, and Valdez. And they couldn't put Yoshida into that lineup on Sunday. And then, you know, I understand that there are situations with who they want to DH in the games that followed, but he sat 3 days in a row and he's not hurt and he didn't struggle the 2 games before that. Like, it's so extreme with him that I don't get why he's handled to this level.
So I share your frustration with the Yoshida contract in the way that this roster is constructed. Like, it just doesn't make sense to have a guy like Masa being your full-time DH. He's not a typical DH. He's not a real power hitter. He's more of a contact guy. He's been kind of streaky. It's not an ideal situation for DH. But right now, they are faced with this choice of playing either Devers or Tyler O'Neill or Masa Yoshida. Like, that's kind of the choice that's outlined in front of them, because the only guy who can play center field really is Jaron Duran, with Sedan locked in at shortstop. Willy Abreu has to be in the field every day, because over the last, how many games is this? This is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 games, he's slashing .333, .450, .636 with a .208 WRC+. Basically, since they made him a full-time player, he's been absolutely electric. And he had another four hits today, which raises that slash line up even more. So you can't take him out. You can't take O'Neill, who's a better defender and a better hitter, out. You can't take Devers out. You can't take Duran out, who's one of your best hitters. Like, I just can't see a path for him right now. Is there another path that you think, like, I can't see it. Where do they put him?
So if it was just those two games, that's fine. I wouldn't, like, go crazy over it. But why did he need the second day off in a row last Thursday? Why did he need Sunday off after he had two huge games in a row and they needed the DH Heinemann? He can't play 3 days in a row?
Oh, I agree with you. He should have played over Heinemann. That's crazy to me. I have no idea why they did that.
It's the 5 days off in seven games with an off day in between that is driving me nuts.
Yeah, and I don't see a fix to this on the roster, really, until Devers starts playing third base again. Because, you know, I mean, Keaton, maybe you're looking at this in a different way than either of us, but, like, where the hell does he fit until Devers goes back to third base?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of, like, in the middle of you two. So, like, having O'Neill and Rafi come off the IL just didn't have a place for him.
Well,
Raf
was never on the IL. He was just benched for 2 weeks. what was amounted to a full IL stint. So it was stupid, but yeah.
Yeah. So, like, that makes sense the last 2 days. And I think Bob and I are kind of on agreement in there. It's everything else before it that's just baffling, that there was a place for him to play during all those other games, and he just didn't. And that, I think, makes Cora's comments today all the more confusing. Him reiterating forcefully that he's an everyday DH and pointing out O'Neill and Rafi coming back just made things weird. And he did say that Yoshida will be DHing tomorrow, but that doesn't explain everything that came before it. And Cora just really doesn't address it at all in his comments, and just kind of, like, plays it off like it's the media trying to dig for something that isn't there, but it absolutely is there. And I don't understand why. It's like, the past two games, I get it. There wasn't a spot for him, and it seems like he'll be back being the regular DH as of tomorrow. But I don't know how confident I feel in that actually happening beyond tomorrow, because when those two guys were not playing, he wasn't the everyday DH. They kept putting kind of the name of the day, if you will, in there instead. And I don't get it. I don't understand.
Why can't he play the outfield in a pinch? He started 84 games there last year. He had 3 errors, and one of them was a fielding error. Like, I know his range isn't good. I don't want to see him patrolling left field on a nightly basis, but it's like poisonous. He's played one inning there. It's because Reese McGuire got thrown out of the game and they lost the DH and had to put him in left. Might as well put a pitcher out there if this is how they're going to handle it.
Well, yeah, they made a choice. They played Refsnyder over him in the outfield too in those games that you were referencing, Bob. So, I mean, like, clearly they're looking at this and they're like, okay, every single person who can play outfield for this team is preferable to him in the field. It's kind of crazy.
He's
considering the money
DH
he's making.
That's getting $72 million over the next 4 years.
Yeah, let's put it where it's supposed to be. I mean, this is a bad contract. It's I really liked the signing when it happened. I had high hopes. He tore the cover off the ball for the first half last year, but like the way that this roster is constructed, this contract is sinking this team's flexibility.
Yeah,
it makes no sense if you're not going to play him. That's like, if he's going to be an everyday player, then I don't think it's a terrible contract. But if you're going to sit him over a bunch of randos, yeah, it's a terrible decision. And I don't understand it.
That's mainly my point. Rob Refsnyder is making $1 million. I get why there's value for him on the team, but I don't know. It's not Pablo Sandoval. Like I said, he's just under 800 OPS in his career. He's not been a disaster. I don't think it's going to end up being a good contract, but I don't know that, like, Duran and Abreu have to be 150 games a year for Yoshida to be a platoon. You know, I mean, Tyler O'Neill is going to have to play, especially at Fenway. But I don't know. The usage is just confusing to me, especially recently.
I'm going to make a prediction here. He will be traded to the Los Angeles Dodgers by the trade deadline.
And then turn into MVP?
I mean, he'll probably do really well there. But they, you know, the thing that I was looking at with them is they recently brought up Andy Pages to play right field. And, you know, their right field's kind of janky. They've got Teoscar, James Outman, who's just, like, not playing well this year. And then they have nobody. Like, Chris Taylor and Kike Hernandez are their other bench guys who can play the outfield. And they're just absolutely brutal. So I actually think that makes a ton of sense for a team that's in it, because he can give you some good playoff at bats and stuff like that.
You can't DH there, so you're trading for him to be a pinch hitter, occasional outfielder.
Yeah, exactly. But like, that actually makes sense on a team like this, where, you know, they don't really give a shit about the money. They're just going for it. You know, they just want somebody good coming off the bench late in games and at bats and stuff like that. So I actually think that makes kind of a lot of sense for him.
I can see him getting traded, but you need to play him for people to see the value in Yoshida.
Yeah.
And you know, I can see it for, and this is what it just goes back to early in the season. It was like, this is way too left-handed of a team. And even last year we said that with Verdugo, like moving a left-hander out and then bringing Grissom in as an additional right-hander, they still need to make another move. Of course, Brandon Belt would be replacing Casas, but if Casas came back, you'd have two lefties at first base. It's a very left-handed team, but it's also not an easy contract to trade if you end up in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. All right. Let's move on to our next topic. Some good news. Sinan Rafaela has settled in at shortstop. Bob, this is kind of the discussion that we were having via text a while ago. Initially, I was really against this idea because I love Rafaela in center field. But then seeing David Hamilton day in and day out just butcher everything at shortstop, they finally did make the choice. He's now played there five straight games in a row, so it seems like this is his position moving forward. Is this the best outcome for the team, and why, if it is?
I think so. This is what, and oddly enough, I had the shortstop preview on Over the Monster, so I had to kind of dig into all of the options beyond the starter, you know, after Trevor Story. Well, of course, he's going to play mostly every day if he's healthy, but if he's not, who do we have behind that? And the bench, we looked at Pablo Reyes and Romy Gonzalez, and then it's kind of David Hamilton, Marcelo Meyer, and I kept coming back to Sinan Rafaela, where it was, if Story was out for an extended period of time, I said I would want to see Rafaela move to shortstop, not because I think it's the best move for the team long term, but I didn't want to see what happened last year again. We spent 2 or 3 months last year talking about Kike Hernandez's errors and the revolving door, and it really never got fixed. So with the quality outfielders that we just talked about that are there, that, you know, there are spots for, it's not going to be an elite defensive situation with that. But Rafaela can play shortstop, and he had played a little bit of second base, and it's almost like the Mookie Betts answer that we saw with the Dodgers, where he's the best athlete on the field, and there's a situation at shortstop where they can't make routine plays, and it's costing them games. And it's the second year in a row that that's happened. So just the fact that he had the experience to do that, he had played 20-plus games there the past couple of seasons, and they clearly wanted to just have that flexibility in case they ran into a situation like this. I was surprised they didn't do it right away when Story had the surgery, but whatever. They saw what they needed to see, and better late than never.
Yeah, for what it's worth, they have 4 wins out of the 5 games that he has played shortstop. So, seems to be some correlation there with winning. Keaton, what do you think about the move? I mean, Sedan, obviously, I think if you were to weigh everything equally, he's more of an impact guy in center field. I think it's hard to debate that. But, you know, playing him at shortstop, he's got the arm for it. He's rangy. He's good.
Yeah, he is. I think we wouldn't be seeing it if we weren't getting what we're getting out of Abreu, though. Having him be on fire kind of allows them to move him out of the outfield and into shortstop. So it really is kind of best case scenario for the team. You've got a hot Wilder Abreu, and you're able to put your best athlete at shortstop and actually solidify some infield defense there. So yeah, it's kind of a perfect move, but it's also helped by what they're getting from Abreu.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. And I think that's a good segue into our next segment, buy or sell, hot starts and cold starts. So we're going to start with the good stuff, the hot starts. Going to start with Abreu, who I am really crazy impressed by. I liked what he did last year. Obviously, you know, last year in a small sample size, 2023 at the end of the year, came up slash 316, 388, 474 with a 135 WRC plus. That was really good, but I didn't really buy that, like, that was indicative of the type of player that he is. And now I'm kind of starting to come around to the idea that Abreu might be really good. Because now he's got 68 plate appearances on the year. He's pushed his slash line up to 322, 412, 542 with a 173 WRC plus. He's stolen 4 bags, has 2 home runs. He's still striking out a little bit, you know, 18 strikeouts. But man, I've been crazy impressed with the whole package here. Him on the bases, him playing a good right field, aggressive in left field as well. I think, you know, occasionally he makes some reads that aren't the best, but he's kind of fast enough to make up for it. And the plate discipline is really elite with him. So I'm kind of loving what I see. Are you guys buying the hot start from Willier Abreu?
I think I am. And I may have been wrong, because I wasn't really expecting much from him, given last year was a small sample size, though it was really good, but it was kind of far above what he had done at any level in the minors, so I wasn't really expecting him to be able to repeat it, and he is. So I think I am buying it, and digging into some of the more kind of underlying numbers, going through that Baseball Savant page, I don't see a whole lot of red flags, if any. Like, I don't see something that really indicates that there's a massive amount of regression coming. Maybe, I guess, except for his XBA is under 200, which is pretty incredible. But above average exit velocity, launch angle's great. He's barreling at nearly twice the major league average. So he's just making incredible contact. Hard hit rate well above major league average. And on top of that, he's also walking in the top 10 percentile with nearly 15%. There's just really not a lot that would suggest he's going backwards. He's taking steps forward off of his really great start last year in that small sample size, which is nearly the same amount of games and plate appearances so far this year that he had all of last year at major league level. So I think I'm starting to come around to it that he can be very serviceable. I guess the XBA and the BABIP, the BABIP is extremely high, at like almost 400, but it makes sense when you look at the quality of contact that he's making that his BABIP would be high. And on top of that, he's drawing walks. So this is really not a lot there that makes me kind of question if he can keep this up.
Yeah, I think you guys really nailed everything there, you know, with the small sample. I just needed to see more. I agree, he hadn't done a whole lot of this in the minors. I just thought we might see some adjustments. You know, you get a book on a guy after 80 to 100 plate appearances, and he's continued that. And when you look on that Savant page, everything that you said, he's hitting the ball hard. He's in the top 10 percentile in walks. And he's hitting all pitches at a good, you know, fastball, breaking ball, off speed are all at 250 or better. So, you know, he's seems to be making adjustments. He looks like he belongs, you know, and it's an eye test thing. But when I watch him at the plate, I think he has a great swing. He's mixed in those four stolen bases that I didn't expect. So he's a good base runner. He's made a couple of excellent plays in right field that have, you know, saved one game. You know, his arm is subpar, but he's got good range, and he just kind of looks like, you know, whether he's a strong side platoon or a total full-time player long-term, I'm not positive, but these are all good signs, and, you know, he can hit for average, he can hit for power, he can run, and he can play defense. If he can do any of those at a elite level, you know, we haven't seen that quite yet, but, I mean, he's doing everything well, so I agree. I believe in it.
Yeah, my favorite thing that I was talking to Keaton about last week was the Juan Pierre like arm dangle that he does when he's about to like steal a base. he's such a big dude, like he's such a stocky dude, and for him to do that is just I get a real kick out of it.
Yeah.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, our next guy on the list, since we are all buying Abreu, is Tyler O'Neill, who's off to a very hot start as well. O'Neill, as we have noted, has been excellent with the Red Sox so far. You know, batting over 300, super high OBP, like 450, slugging in the 700s. I mean, this is kind of ridiculous. It's a little bit video game number type stuff, and he has around the same number of plate appearances as Willy Abreu does at this point, because he did miss a little time after the collision. But let's start with you, Bob. Are you buying what Tyler O'Neill is doing?
I am. It was such a no downside trade that they made. And I always just had trouble figuring out why he got buried in St. Louis a year ago. Seems like he kind of had run-ins with the manager and that they didn't think he was hustling and all that, but he really just didn't play a whole lot.
Now, can I interject there just for a second? What's his name? Marmol? Ole Marmol is the guy who was his manager last year, right?
Right.
That guy seems like a prick. Did you see the interaction that he had with like the security guard in the dugout? No. Just seems like he thinks he is God's gift, and I kind of get why O'Neill was butting heads with him. He seems like a tool of a manager. I would not want to play for him.
And they got rid of Mike Schilt because he was just such a prick, right? I mean, like, I don't know. That seemingly, they didn't bring in somebody with a differing style. It doesn't seem like. I haven't seen that video. I don't know. It just didn't make sense to me with O'Neal. Like, I get that he's injury prone, and this wasn't his fault. He got run over. Maybe he should have backed off if the ball was called on the pop-up. But, I don't know. He's age 28. He has had a phenomenal season in the past. His fielding is kind of the only thing that doesn't grade out very well. It is red Statcast, like you wouldn't believe. 100% barrel, 97% walk. Everything that he's doing is backed up. He's one behind the league lead in home runs, and he had 7 days off just now. You know, so in just 3 weeks, he's there. I don't know. I think that he's going to be such a key part. I think he's one of the two or three least replaceable players that are on this year's roster. And I'm not surprised by seeing any of those barrel and hard hit rates, because just by watching the games, every time he even hits a single, it's a missile into the outfield. He doesn't get cheated on anything.
Yeah, the guy's phenomenal. And if you guys remember back to when we were talking about preseason stuff, I got to give myself a little credit here. I did predict that we were all going to love Tyler O'Neill and he was going to have a big season. Was I predicting this? Hell no. But I did
think you predicted that he was going to have some sort of weightlifting competition with Jaren Duran, right?
I did. And I still think that's on the table here. I think one of the funniest things about his performance here is that I think all seven of those home runs are solo shots.
Yeah, because Yoshida isn't playing to get on base ahead of him.
So for what it's worth, I'm buying two. How about you, Keaton?
Well, just to counter Bob there, when O'Neill was healthy and hitting those home runs, Yoshida was in the lineup.
That's a good point.
But, I am also buying it because... I mean, it's an incredibly hot start, but he's matching or bettering across the board everything that he did in that 2021 season where he went absolutely nuts and hit 34 bombs and had 15 steals. It's mostly better, but there's a ton of stuff where... Like, we have an example, a season-long sample size of him keeping this rate up. So it's not like it's something that's completely out of the blue. He's done it before. And maybe you alluded to there's some weird things going on in St. Louis, and he's kind of like the perfect change of scenery candidate. And now he's here, and he's repeating everything that he did in 2021. So it's very believable, very easy to buy in, because we've seen him do it for 162 games already.
I'm going to make a little rant here, too. If Tyler O'Neill goes out and has the season that we all think he can have, Willy Abreu goes out and has a great season, you know, these two guys should be part of the Red Sox long-term plans. I am so sick and tired of the Red Sox being like, hey, this guy thrives in Boston, and he seems to really like being here, but by the way, we're not going to pay him. So,
Adrian Beltre.
Yeah, I mean, give O'Neill a contract if he balls out this year. Like, there's just no excuse at this point. And I think they should go after Abreu real hard to try and get him on one of those Sedan Rafaela deals as well. So, yeah. All right, next guy, Connor Wong. Wong is playing absolutely out of his mind. He had two home runs today, five home runs total this season. He's slashing 370, 386, 667 on the year with a 197 WRC+. Keaton, catchers is kind of your thing. So are you buying Connor Wong as kind of breaking out?
No, absolutely not. Just kind of continuing our trend with StatCast. His page is ice cold. He is playing well above his head. You know how many barrels he has on the season?
Two.
Close. It's one. He has one barrel.
Ooh, that's worse than two.
It's worse than two, yeah. Walking less than 2% of the time. Yeah, this has regression written all over it in big red bold letters.
Didn't have any barrels because all of his home runs are towering moonshots over the monster. I don't know.
I mean, you're not wrong. His launch angle is 24. That's kind of absurd.
Right.
He's selling out for the big fly.
Yeah. But I think less than 36 is a barrel. So that he's there's.
Yeah, I mean,
he's not getting a hold of him.
I agree. I'm not believing in the 1053 OPS or the 370 average. I don't know. I think that Wong didn't do this for more than like a month last year, but he had a similar hot month around the May, June area, I want to say. In July, he hit 313 in 19 games last year. So I think it's somewhere in between. I think that he can be a viable starting catcher and hold the fort for a year until Kyle Teal is ready. I don't think he's going to hit for this power. I don't think that he's going to hit over 300. But I don't know. When all is said and done, he could have a 260 average with 12 to 14 home runs, and it wouldn't shock me. I just think that StatCast doesn't tell the whole story with him, and I think that he, he can be an 8 or 9 hitter and not kill you. And I've just been impressed with kind of how important the spots are that he's had some big hits this year. I think he can kind of handle the moment as well.
I like Connor Wong. I want him to do well. But I'm more with Keaton on this one. I think that Wong is probably a good backup catcher, and that's totally fine. He's keeping the seat warm until Kyle Teal's ready to come up and mash and be the catcher of the future for the Red Sox. But I did get really pissed off at Connor Wong yesterday. Did you guys see that when it was the rainy game against Cleveland and he got caught sleeping at first base and got picked off by, I think it was Hunter Gaddis.
Well, the base running on this team is atrocious.
It was so bad. I was like, as a catcher, you're supposed to be like the most aware person on the field, and to get picked off. No, it wasn't even Hunter Gaddis who picked him off. It was the catcher who caught him sleeping and picked him off, which is like, yeah. I feel like the most embarrassing thing that can happen to you on the field if you're an opposing catcher.
They do the dumbest shit on the bases night after night, and I can't even. I wish I was keeping a running list of stuff that drives me nuts.
That should be a new column for you. Dumb shit the Red Sox do on the bases.
I'm happy to write that.
Yeah.
Two plans, baby. I'm going to go back and
watch 50 hours of film before I do it.
They're filling up the feed of the two plan tracker.
Oh, yeah.
Or is that dead because Elon killed bots, or is that one still alive?
I don't know.
That's a fun one.
Yeah. All right, our next guy is a guy who has a laughably small sample size, but I included him here anyway just for fun because this podcast is fun. Rob Refsnyder, 286 WRC plus in 5 games in 19 plate appearances. Since coming off, are you guys buying that Rob Refsnyder is indeed who we say he is, Mike Trout?
Don't you put that "we" on me.
I'm saying it. He's Mike Trout. He's better than Mike Trout. Look, his 286 WRC plus is better than Mike Trout's.
Is it?
Tell me I'm wrong.
I am not buying this at all.
What are we buying? What are you asking? If he can be a fourth outfielder?
No, if he can be Mike Trout.
Oh, no, I'm not buying that.
But it's fun, isn't it? It's fun to see Rob Refsnyder coming off the IL and like not missing a beat. He barely played at all when he was on his rehab assignments. He was playing like 3 innings in the field at a time, and then he comes up and he's like, okay, 3 straight starts, cool. I'll just hit, you know, missiles all over the field. So that was great.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we generally know who he is. He's a 270 career hitter against lefties. He's hit 280 since he's gotten to the Red Sox in 2022. Probably 80-90% of those are against left-handed pitchers. So I think he can continue to be that and somebody that contributes. And if there is an injury, fills in for a short period of time, but then probably gets exposed if he has to play full time. So I like Ref Snyder, and I definitely see the value with him on a very left-handed hitting team that we already talked about.
I love him.
He will just be another one of those guys whose existence annoys me.
How on earth could you be annoyed by Rob Ref Snyder? All he does
existence
is
annoys
hit.
You.
Yep. Because he's not good.
He is good. He's
with,
not good enough to be a starter.
In one very specific scenario.
But that's
and that
all
annoys
he's used
me.
For. I love him. This is where we will continue to disagree.
He's
Rob
making $1.9 million. You can't get upset with somebody who has hit .280 on this team for $1.9 million.
Bob, that lineup that you referenced, the worst lineup we've ever seen in our lives, he was the highest paid player on the field that day.
Oh, okay. If he needs to be that, then I agree with Keaton.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the cold start guys, and we're going to go through these guys a little bit quicker. You know, just kind of whether or not you're legitimately worried about them or not, and then a quick little snippet because we are getting close to an hour here. First guy, Keaton, starting with you, Rafael Devers.
No, not buying it. Talked about it on last week's pod. He has a bit of an inconsistent start and then is the best hitter in the majors for 3 months. So we're just working through that period right now.
Okay. Bob?
Agreed. He'll be fine. His walks and his strikeouts are fine. He's just got some lingering injuries, which is happening a little more this year than most years. But I think when all is said and done, he'll be 30 homers, 90 to 100 RBI, and just need him to stay on the field. He'll get hot when the weather gets hot.
Yeah, I'm also selling the cold start from Devers here. I think it's more of a health thing, and as long as he gets that under control, he'll be fine. Next guy is Enmanuel Valdez, who's been playing a ton of second base for this team. He's definitely better at second than he was last year. He's still not good at that position, but he's really struggling to impact the baseball right now. Bob, buy or sell the cold start from him?
Buying the cold start, and I think he will be back in the minor leagues when Vaughn Grissom is back. Striking out at a significant rate, not hitting the ball too hard, although his stat cast is okay in that sense, but and just playing below average defense. I just don't know that he offers a ton of this roster when everyone's healthy. But we'll see. I guess it could be him or Pablo Reyes. Valdez has options, right? So I think he'll go down.
That makes sense. What about you, Keats?
Yeah, I mean, if we're just talking offensively, I'm selling it because his quality of contact is really good. I guess the issue is he strikes out a lot, so he's not making a whole lot of that great quality of contact. But it's enough where I think he could be serviceable from an offensive standpoint, but the defense is just the whole pack kind of sinks the whole package. And I agree with Bob when it's time to make some moves. He's probably one of them.
All right. Next guy is Masataka Yoshida. Keaton, buying or selling the cold start?
I'm selling it. I think he's better than this. The only thing is he needs to be given consistent playing time. So that might be the roadblock.
Bob, that sounds like a topic we've talked about. What do you think?
I agree, and I've said enough today.
All right. we'll make that one three agreements. The next one here is Bobby Dalbec.
Yes, move on.
Laughably cold. Yes, we're all buying his cold start. It is truly astounding that he continues to get chances in the major leagues. Bob, how does he do it?
I don't know. And like when Cassis got hurt, it was like this very strong vote of confidence that Bobby's our first baseman. Like, no, he's not. What's the threshold here for you guys? Like, I know we're all past it. Is it 60 at bats with two hits? Like when is it beyond unacceptable? Is it when the first two numbers of his average start with a zero?
What would his K rate be in Braintree, Babe Ruth, right now?
He could put the. I mean, you send him to AAA and he's going to hit 30 homers again, probably, right? Like, I mean, yeah. he's a quad A player.
I think he's a. He would destroy Bananas. Braintree
baseball.
Savannah Banana's future star.
I can see that.
Well, does he have the showmanship? I don't know if he does.
I feel like he does. I feel like he's got a personality. He just kind of hides it behind a wall of suck.
Yeah. And to answer your question, Bob, when he went 0 for 18, that was enough.
Right. You would think.
All right, this next guy I'm going to react to just as emphatically as Bobby Dalbec. I cannot stand David Hamilton, the baseball player. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but I am absolutely buying this cold start. I think he has no place on this roster. I am nearly as annoyed, perhaps more annoyed, with his place on this roster than Bobby Dalbec's, simply because Bobby Dalbec is at least filling in at two positions where we just like need bodies. Hamilton is redundant and bad. I can't stand him.
Is he your Ruff Snyder, where his existence just bothers you?
Yep.
Why does he get the chance before everybody else that's on Sox Prospects or any website? Hamilton's ranked 30th, and he was ranked 20th to 30th a year ago and 2 years ago. Why did he get this chance, and why does he continue to, other than just being on the 40?
That's it.
Like, there are other options. You have to look at somebody else.
They're afraid of losing that year of control when one of their good prospects does well.
Yep. It's not good. Last guy here, Pablo Reyes. Bob, let's start with you.
I think that there's a place for Pablo Reyes, especially with his versatility defensively, but I also wouldn't like give him more than half a year. I think that he is a fine 26th player in your roster. You know, we saw what he can do last year, which is just put the ball in play with the outstanding K rate of 11% a year ago, and that's mostly what he's done, is that 12 to 18% K rate. I mean, it's 31 this year, which isn't good, but he's got 50 plate appearances. I don't know. I don't think that Reyes is a long-term major leaguer, but I think it's fine to have him as your backup infielder, as your David Hamilton role when everyone's healthy.
Keats?
Yeah, I agree. I suppose I'm buying it, but just given the whole role, I feel like he's been that guy.
Love the story for Reyes, but I'm buying that there's a place for him in AAA, in Oakland. Send him back.
What a
get
fake
him out
out
of here. Get him out of here.
That was like a WWE heel turn we just saw.
All right, I'm having too much fun. Last note before we get to the listener questions here. Vaughn Grissom is still rehabbing, started at second base tonight for Worcester. Hopefully he will be back shortly, and then we can finally erase Hamilton and Valdez and all these names that we don't want to hear about again from our memories. First question tonight comes from August West. He says, with all the free passes Breslow has gotten, I feel he deserves at least some of the pie. I think he's referring to Keaton's favorite dessert, blame pie. There are some warm bodies that they could pick up for a bag of baseballs that should be better than the internal options they continue to embarrass us with. Do you agree? Keaton, let's start with you.
I do agree, but I also think that we have been critical of Breslow not doing anything in the offseason. I mean, we called that out pretty plainly, and that feels like it's squarely on him. And I think we were giving him a pass initially, then the further and further we got into the offseason, we were kind of able to heap some of this blame on him. I feel like, I don't know if we necessarily needed to dish out more. I think it was fair. Part of it is the situation he was inheriting. Wasn't going to be kind of an overnight haul, but there were some moves that definitely would have added depth. And in the scenario where the entire roster got hurt, like we've found ourselves in, it would have offered some backup for that, and he didn't do it. But I feel like we called that out at an appropriate time.
How about you, Bob?
Yeah, I mean, it's a complex question because I think that, one, we got to give him time. Two, I like the direction that he went with a lot of the, certain moves that he made in the offseason, but also the point about warm bodies and depth, I agree with. I just don't know how much of this can be blamed on him and how much is ownership. Like, did he think he was going to have the opportunity to spend more in the offseason? Then when he didn't, there wasn't a whole lot left, you know. But at the same time, you can't be without a fifth starter and without a shortstop. And I don't know. I like, is he going to ownership this week and saying, we want to spend $1 million or $2 million to shore up the edges of our roster, have a better bench, replace Tristan Casas, like whatever that is, and that they're saying no? I don't know. It's very possible. I find it insane that for 3 years now, it's like, hey, we could make a minor move that would not embarrass us, that isn't Eric Hosmer because he was, you know, basically DFA'd, or who's that idiot they traded for at the deadline last year? Arias. Like, I don't know. I mean, is it just, no, this is our payroll and we can't put $2 million more. And he was just like stunned by that. And okay, this is our team.
I feel like
it's so hard to know what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. And I feel like the whole full throttle era played a lot into that too. Kind of juicing up our expectations.
Yeah. I mean, I want to go back to how we treated Bloom in the beginning. And I know that people look at me as like the ultimate Bloom hater, but that's just not true.
It's year three that you turned.
Yeah, it was year three that I turned on him, and we were very patient for a long time. And I feel like with Breslow, one of the things that I like about what he's doing is that everything that he has done to this roster makes sense and feels like part of a plan. You know, I very much see this year as Breslow figuring out what exactly is on this roster and seeing things with his own eyes and, you know, taking a hold of this operation. And I do think he will be more active and more purposeful and plan more than Bloom did. I don't think he has that hesitation that absolutely just crippled Bloom from doing anything worthwhile. So I'm not going to criticize him for anything yet. I just want to see how this whole thing plays out right now.
If Bloom and Dave Bush were here this year, I know that the Red Sox don't have a 2.64 team ERA that is infinitely higher than anybody else in baseball. So, yeah. Like, credit has to be given there, you know? They've made changes to the entire pitching staff, and that includes guys like Cooper Criswell that we saw today.
He pitched well.
Right.
Yeah.
He's pitched well 2 out of 3 times.
Yep.
And they are 14-11 because they have the best pitching staff in baseball, and it hasn't even been the same 5 guys. And the bullpen has generally been good. And one thing we haven't talked about is just, like, they've been in all but 3 or 4 games this year. They have lost games in extra innings. They have blown games in the 9th inning. They have been ahead and had meltdowns defensively on the base paths. This team could easily be in first place in the AL East if they just kind of got their stuff together in a few of these games and didn't make catastrophic mistakes. And that's all because of moves that Breslow and Bailey have made with the pitching staff more than anything else.
Yep, I agree. The last question of the day comes from Dalton Bell. He says, Sox are 3 out. Which bullpen arm is the most crucial to keep them there? To me, I look at the bullpen and there are 2 names that have stood out to me above everybody else. And I know that he asked for just 1, but it's hard for me to pick. So I'm going to just say Weissert and Slayton have been the 2 guys who impressed me most in this bullpen so far. I was expecting that Slayton would be really good. I wasn't expecting Weissert to be as good as he was. So if I have to pick one name, I'm going to say Greg Weissert has been super valuable early on.
Yeah, I would say mine would be Slayton. I think the most important name to get right is Kenley Jansen. But if you've got Slayton, who is potentially a future closer, and you get Liam Hendricks back in the second year, or second half of the year, who should be the closer next year, you're set up pretty well in the long term. And those are two guys that you'd be, along with Chris Martin, that you can throw ahead of Kenley Jansen, who just needs to look like himself. So, I mean, there's a path to a really good bullpen. And I think that Slayton is the, you know, the potential Garrett Whitlock type that we've seen, who can go multiple innings and just has looked really strong and confident out there and just throwing strikes.
Yeah, I was going... So the way I thought about this was Jansen and Martin in the eighth and ninth are kind of obviously important, but they're not really, like, they're not underperforming or anything. They're doing well for they're doing what we expected, basically. And you hope that your starters can go six, which they have been. So that leaves whoever's in the seventh is kind of the most important to hand it over to Martin and Jensen to shut the door, which then kind of leads to Bernardino and Slayton as the two guys that I think are kind of the most important ones in the bullpen to be able to hand it over to the guys that you know are going to shut the door.
Bernardino has been great since he's been up. That's a good name.
Yeah.
Really like him. All right, well, that's our show today. We appreciate the questions. As always, we appreciate you listeners out there tuning in each and every week. If you like the show, please tell a friend. Share the news with a fellow Sox fan about this podcast. Helps us get in other people's ears, and that's always helpful to us. So rate, review, do all that good stuff. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow Keaton at The Spoken Keats. You can follow Bob at BobOsGood15. You can follow me at DevJake. And we'll be with you again next week.